Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. The sound of new rioting in Seoul, South Korea today, where several thousand student radicals broke out of a university after a day-long siege and attacked police with rocks and firebombs. Correspondent Richard Wagner is there.
The clash occurred when students who had massed at Seoul's Yonsei University attempted to leave the campus to demonstrate. The riot police drove them back with tear gas. The dissidents responded with gasoline bombs and rocks in what has become ritualistic violence. The background of this confrontation, however, is different. Thousands of students from all over the Republic of Korea have come to Seoul to attempt a march tomorrow to the border between the two Koreas. There, they hope to meet with students from Communist North Korea to conduct a dialogue aimed at reunification of the partitioned nation. The government of South Korea has banned the march and has mustered some 50,000 members of the security forces to make sure the radical students in Seoul get nowhere near the demilitarized zone and their hoped-for meeting. The administration here says the students are being played for fools by the Communist North. And in an unprecedented move, the opposition parties here have joined the government in calling on the students to give up the idea of heading north in the morning. The dissidents, however, are ignoring the politicians and say they'll go ahead with their plans. Richard Wagner, CBS News, Seoul.
In Lima, Peru this morning, leftist rebels are being blamed for a couple of mortar rounds fired at the residence of U.S. Ambassador Alexander Watson. One shell hit the roof, but no one was hurt and damage was slight. The Chinese capital of Beijing has long been considered one of the safest cities in the world for Americans, but today the 1,500 or so who work or study there and some 2,000 American tourists have good reason to worry, as John Sheehan reports.
Chinese authorities issued an urgent warning that terrorists may be planning attacks on American citizens in China. In a message to the U.S. Embassy, the Chinese government said it had information that foreign terrorists may be in Beijing looking for an opportunity to strike at American citizens. The embassy distributed an urgent notice saying that U.S. officials believe there is a genuine threat. Americans were cautioned to avoid restaurants, markets, and tourist locations such as hotels. The American Club of Beijing mounted a telephone relay to spread the warning. Over the last 2 years, the embassy has issued periodic notices that Americans should avoid standing out in China by having flags or other U.S. symbols on their cars or homes. But this is the first time that Chinese authorities have said they had specific information of possible attacks. John Sheehan, CBS News, Beijing.
U.S. diplomats would not specify what country might be involved, but they note China has relations with Libya, North Korea, Iran, and the PLO. Japan's trade ministry today applauded the U.S. Senate for upholding President Reagan's veto of the tough trade bill under which Japan stood to be punished for unfair trade practices. But Tokyo remains worried that a new bill is in the works with similar protectionist measures. Weather forecasters hold out little relief today for the drought-stricken northern plains and the parched south. Water use restrictions have been imposed in many areas, but in Atlanta, officials say too many people are ignoring them. Farmers are hardest hit. In Kansas, 38% of the winter wheat crop is said to be in bad shape. Rich Holter of WCCO Minneapolis checked with Minnesota farm experts.
Some say Minnesota wheat and sugar beet farmers are suffering through the worst drought since the Dust Bowl days of the 1930s. And with the extended forecast calling for more 90-degree heat and no rain, crop losses are mounting. Following a tour of parched farms in the Red River Valley of northwestern Minnesota, State Agriculture Commissioner Jim Nichols said the wheat crop has suffered the heaviest loss.
Their loss is pretty substantial. Each day it's hot and dry. We're losing 6 million.
Nichols says one-third to one-half of Minnesota's agricultural counties are in serious trouble, with total crop losses already approaching $250 million. Nichols and Minnesota Governor Rudy Perpich will go to Washington next week to seek assistance for state farmers from Agriculture Secretary Richard Ling. Rich Holter for CBS News, Minneapolis.
The Senate has given final congressional approval to a compromise catastrophic health care bill, the first major expansion of Medicare in 23 years. It protects 33 million Medicare beneficiaries from extraordinary expenses for acute illnesses such as cancer. At about the same moment, the House killed a proposed $26 billion program to give long-term home care to the elderly and disabled. Robert Shackney has that story.
For Claude Pepper, his proposal to extend Medicare for the long-term chronically ill was to be his monument. Over 150 fellow congressmen, including some conservative Republicans, co-sponsored his bill. Big names in the Senate were lined up to support him. But what Pepper could not do was line up powerful Democratic committee chairmen. Rostenkowski of Ways and Means, Dingell of Commerce, and Gray of Budget. They complained Pepper's $30 billion proposal was too expensive, would raise taxes, and failed to deal with equally critical health problems like nursing homes. On the floor of the House, Pepper made a last-ditch emotional appeal.
When you go home tonight, and you close your eyes in sleep, and you ask, what have I done today to lighten the burden upon those who suffer? At least you could say, I helped a little bit today.
Pepper's appeal wasn't enough. 99 Democrats, including his usual allies, deserted him. His bill lost decisively, 242 to 169. Robert Shackney, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now that he's locked in the Democratic nomination, the governor of Massachusetts is gearing up for the fall campaign against Vice President Bush. Bill Whitaker reports.
Michael Dukakis returned to Boston last night, greeted by a small but enthusiastic group of supporters.
Now I will take that message of caring and of hope and of optimism, lessons that I've learned here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
With the nomination virtually wrapped up, the Dukakis bandwagon is filling up fast. Yesterday, former rival Congressman Richard Gephardt of Missouri jumped in behind Dukakis.
With Mike Dukakis, what you see is what you get. And I like what I see.
Old challengers Bruce Babbitt and Paul Simon climbed aboard, too. Not too long ago, pundits predicted none of the little-known Democratic candidates would capture the nomination. A brokered convention, they said, would turn to Mario Cuomo for salvation. Even the coy New York governor reluctantly endorsed the governor from Massachusetts.
Why can't you bring yourself to say that you're endorsing
him? I endorse him.
As for Dukakis, he's started looking for a running mate. He's predicting party unity and will gladly accept any more endorsements that come his way. Bill Whitaker, CBS News, Boston.
Today, Dukakis met with Costa Rica's president, Oscar Arias, and his wife, Kitty, is being released today from Massachusetts General Hospital, where she had spinal surgery last week. The wife of American hostage Thomas Sutherland, kidnapped in Beirut 3 years ago today, says she remains hopeful her husband is alive and will be released. The State Department yesterday denied a flurry of reports of new U.S.-Iran hostage talks. The Arab uprising against Israeli occupation began 6 months ago today, and in the latest violence, troops today shot and killed a West Bank teenager and wounded at least 10 others. The dollar is higher, gold is down 250 in London, and on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Industrial Average is ahead, 4.09 at 2107.04.